to start by saying, had I known you guys were going to be here, I would have worn deodorant or not come. One of
those. Thanks for that. I almost didn't, so, you know, you get.
Yeah, you almost didn't wear deodorant or didn't come.
Either one. No.
Okay. Well, welcome to the Poser Podcast. We are sitting here with my father-in-law, Darren Hillis.
Don't use my real name.
And Jimmy Dean Phillips.
Danger.
Danger.
Okay. D for Danger.
Right. With D for Danger, also known as Rob Smith.
We're back in our habitat.
We are in our in my living room.
Yep.
In my little apartment.
Should we describe the living room? I mean, it's huge. That fireplace is just amazing.
Yeah, we're recording video,
yeah.
So.
Yeah. Oh. So they'll soon
the
know this is a
over
sham.
Over there. Yeah. Back behind that part of the show.
Yeah.
I personally enjoy all the stuffed, protected American wildlife.
Yeah. The behind the owl. Camera.
Yeah.
The American eagle.
Yeah.
Tastes a lot like great horned owl.
We had originally, we had a topic.
Yeah.
But we're still on the fence as to whether or not we're going to.
Yeah, we'll tell them to talk about it.
I think you ought to spring it on us because I think we're prepared.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
I think we're ready. You ready?
No.
Well, we had planned to talk about, oh, I dropped my hat, about fatherhood and the reason why, and like its importance and how, because in our country today, we had a guy yesterday come to our roots group thing at Hope, which is just kind of like a guy gets up and talks in front of all the kids, and you know what it is. But a guy gets up and talks in front of all the kids, and then we all do small groups. And he talked about fatherhood, and he was talking about how in our country today, like, it's such a just underwhelming thing. It's no one really knows what. In modern culture, no one really knows what it means to be a father and how and its importance in the lives of kids yeah. today. So
it's pretty deep. Can we talk about the new Superman film?
We did
sure.
Yeah.
We could relate it through his father issues. Yeah.
Yeah. Abandonment.
Yeah, and we did that last time.
So who was it that spoke at Roots.
Mark Oppenheisen, Daniel's dad.
Wow, cool.
Yeah, he's a cool dude. Doesn't look anything like Daniel. I don't see it at all.
Thank goodness.
Yeah.
It's another issue.
If you're listening.
I don't think he listens to my podcast. I think he says he does, but he never does.
I think we'll find out now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you just want us to chat about fatherhood?
Yeah. Like, I don't know. People just don't realize how important it is anymore. Like, we were talking about it in a small group yesterday, and we were all talking about our fathers and everything, because he gives us a lot of, they give you a lot of questions at the end of the talk to talk about in small group, and a lot of the questions are just asking about your father, like just the everyone's fathers and different things, and just going around just in my small group, like a lot of guys knew things about their fathers, but I was kind of shocked at how many said that they didn't really have a good relationship with their dad, or I wasn't very shocked about how many live in a divorced home, just because you hear about it all the time nowadays. And it's just, I don't know, it's sad to me because my dad is my hero. Like, he is a lot of the reason why I am who I am today. Like, they're
for sure.
Yeah. Like, he has been probably the single most important aspect of my growth as a human, and as a man. And he taught me what it meant to be a man, a real man, not what the world says a man is, like, you know, how to treat women and how, you know, just how to be a godly man and everything. Like, and it's just, I don't know, it's just sad to me, not, you know, to hear the guys that I'm the closest to talk about how
you're the exception.
Yeah.
In this age.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow, it's just sad. And you being the dad of, and I thought it'd be cool to have you both talk. I was just going to have Darren talk, but.
Then I'll shut up.
Thank you, Rob.
But
I'll continue.
We're to put this really, mic.
Really, I think we just, we want your input, like, experientially, but also ideologically. Like, what is the role model or the main thing that you are shooting for, you know? Because there's your own experiences, and then there's also what, you have to have something to be shooting for to even know what you're doing, you know?
Yeah.
Well, I would like to hear about Rob, because I just met him tonight, and I don't even know, and you probably don't, I don't know if you know about my family, or, but maybe we can talk about our families real quick, and who, who lives with us, and who we're fathers to.
That's also kind of why I wanted both of you here, because you're the dad of all boys, and you are the father of mostly girls.
Exactly.
And,
mostly girls.
Mostly girls. My brother Luke is sitting across from me,
requesting acknowledgement in the room right now.
He is a big old tater eating son of gun sitting right next to me.
He's a man,
and we are the. Say hello, Luke.
Hello.
And I am your father. Yeah. He is so tired of that. I tell you,
never heard
that one before. Luke Skywalker, and I'm the father of three girls, and yes, we are the minority in the sorority, if I didn't say that already, raised by wild women.
Yeah, and I've got three sons that are grown up pretty much. My oldest is a husband and a father, new father, just a couple weeks ago, which we're really excited about that, our second grandson.
It's crazy.
And my middle son, Chris, is married. And they have a son that's about a year and a half old. And my youngest is Tyler, and he is in Japan. He is a U.S. Marine. And so we've got three boys. So now we've got an empty nest, gotten everyone out of the house. Don't know how long I'll be before some of them come back, but, you know, we changed the locks. We honestly changed the locks. So
is the nest is the nest clean now?
No, my wife still lives with me.
Oh, okay. Ooh, you are busted.
Oh, sorry. Guess we'll find out if she listens too.
Well, you will.
Rob,
I'm not going to tell her. I told her I was out shooting pool or something.
But Rob's kids, we've actually talked about a few different times.
Yeah.
Whoa, hang on. What?
Just because I grew up with them. And
I thought I was paying you guys to talk about me.
Cat's out of the bag.
Yeah. Oh, well.
You know, it's interesting y'all bring this topic to the, what is this called? A cast of pods?
Yeah. The casting of the pods. The
casting of the pods. And I've just, this past couple weeks, I just keep running into all these young couples with, most of them with children. Which kind of fits into the topic, and just the struggles, you know, and that obviously there's been just that breach over the last, I don't know, 50, 60, 70 years, I guess, where, you know, the role of not just dads, but moms and everything's just gone so haywire.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're really just experiencing the, I guess, the obvious future of what we've seen happen, you know, over those years of just, you know, I guess one in every two marriages are failing, and just the openness of, you know, people having affairs, and the lack of, I guess, respect for each other a lot of times. And it's just kind of crazy. Now, the last few years, probably the last 10, 15 years, I've seen the younger generation of that Gen X group who have grown up in such a terrible situation at home, usually are really trying to be good dads, especially. I think women have always kind of towed the line. It's amazing to me how much cooler and stronger women are than us idiot men.
Yeah.
And you know, I married way over my head, and the thing that they're finding, though, these men that are trying to do good, they don't know what to do.
Yeah.
Because they really have had no model.
Yeah, the model's
gone. They're struggling, and they're researching, and they're trying. But all they got to pull from is, you know, an empty well, really, of what their dads who have been, you know, not there. Some of them just, you know, a lot of us grew up with dads who sacrificed their families on the altar, I say, of a successful business, you know, to caring for the family, trying to keep everything straight. And that's something I always struggle with, too, is that balance, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like Luke knows, sometimes, you know, we're going to go have fun and do something crazy, and then other times he knows when I tell him I gotta get this done, he knows to leave me alone, and I gotta get her done. Yeah. But family always comes first for me.
Yeah.
And that's just something, you know, that's always been a part of our growing up. But I don't know, that kind of sets a tone, I guess. We're living in a, yeah. I don't know how to help some of these folks. I want to help them.
I think you're right that the model is gone. We had a pastor once that explained to us that he was going to do everything he could to teach us, which is the first generation of small group leaders. He's going to do everything he can to teach us 100% of what he knows about small groups. And he said, the problem is you're going to do everything you can to teach 100% of what you know to the next generation, and so on and so on. He said, the fact of the matter is, I'm going to teach you 100%. I'm really going to give 80% because I'm going to forget something, or you're not going to soak it in. Then you're going to turn around and pass on 80%. And after four or five generations, what do you have? Then we tend, just as humans, as people in general, to twist things up and remember things incorrectly and stuff. So I think you're dead on that the model is basically gone. For fathers in America.
And I think you said it best, is like just trying to say something once in a while or a teaching time. That's what has been missing, is just spending time. Because they always, in parenting, they talk about, well, it's not the quantity of time, it's quality. And I think that's a bunch of bunk. I think it's both. I think you've got to spend quantity with people. And I had a fortunate thing with my son, and I'll probably embarrass him. He probably doesn't even know this, but I'd probably say Luke is probably my best friend, you know, in this world. And because we're so much alike, we spend a lot of time together. When I first started my company years and years ago, a nonprofit, he was just a little squirt. And my Jane started working at Hope, and I was working out of the house, and he spent most of the time right behind me in my chair, jumping up and strangling me like this. Let's go to Monday Fun Day. And we used to do this thing called Monday Fun Day, where we would go up to the mall and get some breakfast, or go skateboarding, or go ride bikes, or whatever he wanted to do. It was his deal. And, you know, to have that opportunity of your son when he's a little guy like that is just a gift. And I'll never forget, I got a phone call. And it was the same kind of stuff like I was just saying. I would get a phone call sometimes, and I'd have to try to explain to this 3-year-old or 4-year-old or 5-year-old, whatever he was at that given time, shh, man, daddy's on the phone with a big client, you know. And he'd be like, messing around. And I'd say, shh. And one time I was talking to a big wig dude, and I'll never forget this. It was a huge, like, epiphany for me. He heard me saying something, Luke, just go watch SpongeBob, I'll be in a minute. And he goes, oh, don't worry about your son. He says, are you working at Home? I said, yeah, because I always try to trick them like I was in some big, you know, complex somewhere. Little did they know I was in my underwear with a kid drooling down my back. And he goes, you know what? This guy said, I wish I was you, man. He said, you're at home with your son, you get to spend all that time with him and teach him. And he said, man, I would give anything to be that. I'm stuck up here in this high rise, whatever. And it hit me. God said to me right then, you idiot, you know? And so from that on, I never told Luke to, you know, I mean, he was always pretty good anyway, but it was like, I always tried to, whenever he was messing around or causing trouble, I just kind of thank God that I had that opportunity. And now what's neat, to drag this out a little further, is I've started a new company up this past year.
What's the name of it?
Huh?
What's the name?
In the Wings.
Nice.
Soon to be a sponsor of your
absolutely
your huge global yeah. undertaking here. And
thank you.
Thank you.
Gratuitous plug for in the week. And, anyway, it's kind of come full circle because Luke now, I'm working at home again because I was in kind of a corporate situation the last 9 or 10 years. Yeah. And now he's going to be homeschooled by me, I guess, to some degree, which means go get on the computer, Luke, and leave me alone.
You're in trouble, Luke.
But he's going to be following me around and going to meetings, and I'll get to teach him now as a young man things that I couldn't teach him when he was 3, you know. And he probably will still be loud and obnoxious when I'm on the phone calls, and I'll probably thank God for him again.
You want to homeschool me?
Sure.
I like to go to meetings.
Let's all just do a homeschool for adults. Be fun. Anyway, that's my story on that. And I think, you know, we count our blessings. Sometimes people look at things or children and that is like a hindrance to their growth and their success and their business. And it's just so far from the truth. And I guess all the way back to don't ever let business and even the care. I mean, these men do this because they saw their men, their dads, even as what, builders? Is that what the boomers, right? Mm-hmm. And yeah. builders were these people who really lived to care for their families. And that was probably my dad, you know, to some degree. And, you know, we've become so much closer over the years since he got out of corporate world.
Yeah.
And it's just like all of a sudden, you know, we're like best buddies. So it's amazing how we just get a new yeah. perspective sometimes.
Ian and I were talking about this the other day, how there's kind of a transition. It's funny how the past generation of boomers especially, but the past two generations, two or three, have this expectancy of the way things are supposed to work now. Like ever since World War II and the economic boom and everything, it's like the man's supposed to go get the job 9 to 5, yeah. and that's what he does, and you get the house in the suburbs and all of that. And we're starting to see this transition again with the economy and just everything of people escaping, I call it escaping, the 9 to 5 and being able to have, you know, businesses like In the Wings and things like that where they have more time with their family. And it's kind of in a different way coming back full circle to the agrarian society of yeah. you had kids so they could work with you on the farm and you spent your lives together, you know. And
yeah,
I mean, I'm not proud of it, but I'm almost 25 and I'm still at home because of the economy and everything. And I'm working to get out. But, yeah. you know, until then, it's still like it was before where you help out at the house and they're mom and pop, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, we've gotten this image that it's wrong for you to be at home. And I really hate that because, you know, if we all still kind of followed some of that lifestyle and had a big home and everybody kind of stayed at home and, you know, had kids and helped out, and I think a lot of our issues would go away. But what's happening is you're getting to the point where you feel peer pressure, whatever that societal pressure is, to get out of the house. And where do you go? You go into the city, and I hate it, but I love the city. I'm a Memphis City boy. But the more people you get into a congested area, the more anonymity you get. You would think it would be the more seen and more visible you are, but you kind of blend in and disappear. And, you know, yeah. we're humans and we get a little bit twisted in our thinking and our actions and our behaviors, and you start blending in. And, you know, you heard the song, The Freaks Come Out at Night. You know, we all start kind of congregating towards one another and identifying with our weirdness and our wackiness. And before you know it, you know, we've got these crazy issues that we would have never had if yeah. we had stayed home and stayed with close to family, to where we had some accountability and had some,
yeah.
you know, a real family identity instead of going off and trying to make our way and find our way in the world. Because, you know, that's yeah. it's not always a sad ending story, but yeah. you know, the fact is a lot of times it is.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. yeah.
I think the modeling is what's so good too, of being in that nuclear setting of a family. You know, I mean, my kids have seen me at my absolute worst, you know, with my wife and just being a father, and they've seen me, you know, just fail. I mean, fall flat on my face. And thank God they always kind of, you know, give me a second chance. But I try to always, when I finally get convicted or whatever you want to call it, or caught or whatever, I try to fight fair. You know, I try to show, not fight, I guess that's a good term too, though. Fight fair, fight with love and mm-hmm. try to work things out. And, you know, many, I guess my modeling has always been to usually go to my kids, even with when I offend my wife and treat her wrong and apologize to them.
Yeah.
You know, usually because Jane's still, you know, very upset somewhere.
Please, but, baby, please.
But, you know, and I think that's what's missing a lot. Like you're saying, Rob, I mean, just people don't see this. They don't experience. They don't know how to do that anymore. And when you live, and I agree, I don't think there's anything wrong with living at home and seeing, you know, if you're living in a good, you know, situation with yeah. your parents. I mean, I guess there's kids that are learning what not to do, and hopefully they're learning that. Like, ooh, I don't definitely yeah. don't want to do that to my wife someday.
But. Hey, I grew up in broken homes, and my wife did as well. My parents divorced when I was 3 and had a couple kids together after that, kind of on and off kind of deal. And then I had a stepmom when I was 12. And I saw a lot of things that I was determined, I'm not going to do that. Mm-hmm. You know, my dad, he recently passed. And I've never been able to say some of the things because I didn't want to offend him. But he encouraged me to get out and play the field and chase women and do all this stuff. Mm-hmm. And he owned bars yeah. and nightclubs and stuff. And he actually encouraged me to pursue that. And when I was 17 years old and fell in love with my wife in high school, he thought I was crazy. I mean, he did everything he could to speak down to that and dog her and stuff mm-hmm. like that. And I've been married for, 26 years now. And it wasn't until maybe about 5 or 6 years ago that my dad told me, "You found a winner. Lisa is amazing. Wow. She's an amazing woman." It's like, duh. Yeah. I was 17 when I yeah. figured that out. Yeah. How old are you? But Lisa's parents, Lisa's been through a couple broken. Her mom remarried a couple times. When we dated in high school, we had a thing that we would say all the time. We're going to graduate, have dinner, get married, and have kids. Now, we did that all backwards. We kind of had kids and then graduated, and then we're still trying to save up some money for a nice dinner. But but we were determined to do all the things different from what our parents did. And I don't think most people, I guess everybody may think that I don't want to be like my dad, or I don't want to be like this. I don't want to be in that kind of relationship. But I don't know what it is. And the only way Lisa and I can explain it is God put us together and gave us that inner resolve. Because this is before I was a Christian. She was saved at like 11 years old. But he gave us something, some kind of resolve and determination to act on those things that we were saying. We weren't just, you know, it wasn't some pie in the sky. It's like those were our goals.
Yeah.
And
that's awesome.
We're really blessed because we talk, you know, Lisa and I, now that we're empty nest and we'll go out and eat a steak or something like that. And on the way home, just the other night, the sun was setting and we were holding hands, walking back out to the car or something. I said, you know what? We did it. And there's such a sense of accomplishment, knowing that we purposed in our hearts to do something. And here we are, you know, 26, 30 years, 31 years later, since we've known each other, met each other, and we did it. You know, now we've got a couple grandkids and our kids are, you know, they haven't been angels. They each have had their struggles and stuff, but now they're starting to get what our commitment was, because Lisa stayed home and homeschooled. I worked and did the best I could, and we were never terribly poor, but we never made tons of money. And my kids get that, you know, we made a huge sacrifice for Lisa to not go out into the corporate world and to stay home and to homeschool and do things like that. So, yeah. you know, we didn't have it modeled, but because of what we saw, we determined to model it ourselves. And I think we're successful.
Yeah.
I think so.
I think that's the ebb and flow of it all too, is you talk about the generations and how there's a memory and not a memory of, you know, modeling and the examples. And it's, our situation, I come from a home, 26 years married to Jane and I, and my parents, they just celebrated their 50th wedding anniversary, and they've had their struggles. I mean, I can't go into all that on open mic night, but I mean, they've always been madly in love, let me state that, but through my mom's ovarian cancer when she was younger, and now it's coming back again, and just struggles with my sister and I both with different issues. Challenged. And yet on my wife's side, I can say there's been every one of her brothers and sisters are divorced, you know, sometimes multiple times, and just, I don't know if that's correct. That's not correct. But all of them, even her parents, after 50-some years of marriage, split up. And, you know, you talk about a tough time in that side of the world and trying to figure that out. Even Jane, her heart breaks for her family. And yet now, years later, you know, people are seeing Jane and I, and really the foundation of Christ, the cornerstone of our marriage, they are seeing, you know, they being, you know, the Swing, my wife's maiden name is Swing, that side of the family is starting to really kind of see, you know, what the difference is, the difference maker, I guess. Yeah. And, you know, and that comes with you know, Christ asks you to pick up your cross every day. And that's marriage. I always define marriage and fatherhood and all that, being a husband, is one word, love. Love is work. And I just define it as work. Because
yeah,
sometimes it's just like work. Rob, I think you probably do work that you love. I love my work. It's not always fun, but I absolutely love it, you yeah. know? And that's what marriage and fatherhood is. I mean, in the end, sometimes it's the hardest stuff in the world. Other times it's this exhilarating joy to see your kids grow and do amazing things. But a lot of times it's just flat out work, you know? And it's a job. It's a job I love to do, if that makes sense. So yeah. What was it Mark Twain said, and a bunch of other people, find a job that you love to do and you'll never work a day in your life. Right. And so I guess that defines it as being a father and a husband and all that.
Yeah. You know, thinking about modeling and love being work. My kids see, just as you said, you know, they've seen me at my best and my worst, mm-hmm. and I probably had far too many worse days than I would ever care to admit, but they've seen it all. And one thing that they've seen is, when the kids were younger, Lisa and I had a lot more stress financially in her home with the kids and stuff. And we went through spells where we would argue a lot. And, you know, we've had some door slamming arguments and things like that, just like a lot of people do. You can't pretend that doesn't happen. And as we've gotten older, my kids have seen that we argue less and argue less and argue less. And it'd be easy to say, well, Michael moved out, so there's one less thing to argue about. And then Chris... Yeah. Or Chris was last, actually. anyway, they have seen us work through and learn how to navigate our relationship, and who, you know, who's expected to do what and who's expected to behave this way and things like that. And I don't think, you know, I've often thought they ought to teach some things in school. You know, home economics and all that stuff went out the window. But I think there's room in the school system. If we're going to teach somebody how to drive, let's teach them how to relate to, you know, to someone in your future. And that's gone. I mean, that's just, it's absolutely gone. So I think it's good for people to be at home when they're younger and see and experience their parents' relationship. And I think it's important too for parents not to hide their relationships. I know people who said, my parents have never argued a day in their lives. It's like, you're crazy. They just hid it from you.
Yeah, exactly. You know?
And see them. Yeah.
I always tell young people, I say, don't ever marry anyone until, or even get engaged until you have had a knockdown drag-out fight. I mean, you know, because you got to learn how to resolve conflict. You got to know how to, like I said, fight fair and fight clean. But you got to know it's coming. And, you know, I run into these people, oh, we've never fought. I'm like, well, you're in trouble, dude, you know, because you're going to. Something's going to hit the fan.
And it's going to be ugly. It's going to be unexpected.
Well, and you don't want to figure that out, young people that are listening, or older folks that are getting married late, once you've already committed yourself for life, you know, till death do you
the
part.
Day after your honeymoon or whatever. Yeah, man. Oh, we're moving into my apartment, right? No. What?
Yeah, we talked about that. Remember?
You're a cat person?
Yeah. I'm allergic to cats.
Now I'm a cat person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you got sucked into cat.
When did that happen?
When we got married.
I've been trying to get those Woto hairs out of my nose since I walked in.
Yeah. I don't know. No, I like that cat. She's cool because she doesn't act like a cat.
So I think we've talked more about marriage than children, or have we? Or is it all one and the same?
It's all.
I mean, it's kind of one hand in hand. So it should be.
Well, yeah, I don't think there's any way to raise kids. You know, as a, I guess I'm a fan of Mark Twain. He always said, you know, when a kid turns 13, you put him in a barrel and feed him through the knot hole. And when he turns 16, you plug up the knot hole. But, or Bill Cosby said, I wish kids were more like chickens. When you get tired of chickens, you just kill them and eat them. Yeah. My wife hates that quote, but I love it. And
I didn't laugh at that. I was laughing at something else.
Yeah, it's a terrible thing. But I mean, I think it all comes out of the marriage. I mean, you know, it's not rocket science. I mean, raising kids and being a good father is just being vulnerable and being, you know, Luke says, I'm always right. And I'm always, you're always having to make it that you're right. And I said, no, it's just that I've lived longer. I've made more mistakes. You know, I try to apply what I've learned, and unfortunately for us that know it all,
I've learned a lot.
Yeah, I've learned a lot.
Yeah, I am always right.
He knows. Yeah. But, you know, that is how the father comes off a lot of times, and instead of letting him have his wings and let him crash into the wall, which I need to do more of, which he is going to get the opportunity to do more and more, you want to protect him, you know, and you want to try to keep them from going through the painful stuff, you know, we went through. And I think as an adult, one thing a friend of mine, Brian Hausman, who's a great guy here in town, do you know Brian Hausman?
I think I do.
Yeah. He's
a speaker.
Yeah. He's a youth speaker. And,
he spoke for us. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't know exact wording he puts it, but he says, you know, as adults, we tend to look at not just teenagers or just kids in general, but specifically, I think in junior high, man, you get to this point where you're changing and everything means a whole bunch more to you, and especially with book face or whatever that thing is. Kids are on.
It's passing. It's a fad.
Yeah, that's what
I give it another 30, 40 years.
The trend. I try to come around retro on stuff. But anyway, that's how I drive my kids crazy. I try to mispronounce everything.
And that's what Luke's rolling his eyes about.
Yeah, he knows. I love to drive him crazy.
So I'm used
but,
to it.
Brian said this, I'll never forget it. It was so poignant and just right on. He said, we as adults tend to downplay what these young people are going through. And because we have gotten to this point and lived through all this other pain and suffering and agony.
We minimize it for
them. We minimize it. But if we have the wisdom as adults to do a little time travel back and to try to put ourselves back in junior high, back in fourth grade, and bottle up that hurt and that pain and that disappointment that we felt when we were in junior high or whatever, and then try to step out of that and be a father, it'll change how we look at our kids. And instead we just... I don't know what that is, where we just, and I try to do that. I think that's one thing I've, probably because of Brian Hausman, that I've raising my kids. I try, like, you know, Haley went through something rough about a year ago, and a part of me wanted to go, suck it up, girl.
Yeah, you'll get over it.
Your sisters have been through this, but I knew she was hurting, and I'd learned from my other daughters when I hadn't taken it seriously.
That it's a real hurt.
It's a real hurt. So I said, would it help if I bought you a bird? You know, and you know, it's amazing what a bird can do to heal the pain of somebody. But it was really me saying, look, I get it. This is serious stuff. And I know you're hurting. And we went out and we did something and bought a bird, and she loves her bird. And Dr. Hamp, we call him, because he's a healer of all pain. And, you know, and it's just, I'll never forget, though, to give credit to Brian. It's so important that we understand that as parents, that hurt, that those feelings, and, you know, in psychology, they say all feelings are legitimate. You all understand that? You ever heard that?
Yeah.
It's so critical to understand, because you can't say, well, you shouldn't feel upset about this. You know, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
I do feel this. I'm angry. I'm hurt. I'm suffering.
Yeah, you cannot tell
somebody that they shouldn't or do not feel something that they're experiencing.
Yeah.
And it may not be sometimes, what do you call it? legit or something in your mind. Yeah, like
valid.
Well, the but, perception
but
is
for
reality.
That person.
Yeah, yeah.
That's, man, perception, I love that reality. Quote. I say it all the time. Like the Mid-South Fair being unsafe. Mid-South Fair is safe as no one's ever gotten hurt at the Mid-South Fair, but people got this perception that it was unsafe years ago, and it just started to cave in because
it's so,
they think it's real.
Yeah. It's so funny that you'd say that, because Ian and I have talked about this for years, and we've always said that exact same thing.
Yeah.
That the Mid-South Fair is safe?
That too. No, but like how there's so many adults, especially when we were in junior high and high school, that would say, well, like, well, it's just feelings. And they would say that over and over again. They're just your feelings. And like, okay, I understand. Maybe what I'm feeling isn't legitimate, but I'm still feeling it.
Yeah.
Like, it's still valid.
You're not really angry. It's a secondary emotion. Well, I'm going to punch you in your face.
And that's actually the whole perception is reality thing. It's kind of funny that you talk about that, because I think I've talked to you about this before too. But
he's pointing at Rob. That's me. I think you got to start over from the break.
The guy with the pink mic.
Yeah.
Yes. No one knows this.
The old pink mic.
With all sons, I'm glad you're embracing your feminine side.
That's right. I was going to hold my microphone like Scotty McCreary, but I can't quite figure out what that is. I don't know. I can't pull it
too
off.
Too bad the video's right now.
Rob, what are your grandkids? Boys, girls?
Two boys.
Two boys.
Mm-hmm. Aaron and Blake. Blake is the first, and Aaron is the second. And Aaron really looks like Benjamin Button. And I told my wife, I don't know how to tell Michael and Brittany this, but then they pointed it out, so it's okay.
I know, that's what I'm afraid of.
It's on the web now.
Because my daughter's very the most beautiful mother I've ever seen pregnant.
Yeah,
mother. I hope none of those ones are pregnant. I said pregnant.
Oh, by the way,
Bo's a good looking man, but you know how that goes. Sometimes those good looking people have those butt ugly kids, man. And then how do you?
That's what I got a quote in here. I got a bunch of quotes.
Butt if ugly? It says butt ugly,
no,
ugly kid.
No. Ernest
Hemingway quotes from somewhere else.
Ernest Hemingway said, "To be a successful father, there's one absolute rule: when you have a kid, don't look at it for the first 2 years."
Yeah, Bill Cosby says they come out looking like lizards.
Yeah,
stacks and.
Yeah.
Weirdness.
Yeah.
But
that there's a lizard.
I was saying something.
You were talking about reality.
Perception.
Oh, yeah.
Perception is reality.
The perception is reality thing. I had a movie idea, like an independent film idea, that I was really working on hard for a long time. It's called Shut Up, I'm Serious would be the name of it. And it's.
I forgot about that.
Yeah. And that's what
Shut
it's
Shut up.
I'm serious.
I want
Shut
it.
Don't go up. It only brings people down. That's an original.
I believe
that.
I
made that up when I was a youth pastor.
I believe that.
When kids would say, shut up. Go ahead. Go on.
But I've been thinking about putting it on like Kickstarter or Indiegogo or something like that. And just see what people thought about it. But it's just I'd follow around a few different students, a few different kids. And just in different type of home situations, divorced parents, broken home, foster kid, you know, kid whose parents have been the, you know, epitome of a great marriage their entire life, and just, you know, see the, just how their, you know, how their lives go, and just throughout the process, just kind of talk to the parents about my idea of the fact that, you know, like, to that, like you were just talking about, like to that kid that, you know, break up, that boy that she was just dating was her world at 15 years old. And now her world has been just destroyed and it's gone. And to us, it's just like, you're going to get over it. You're going to be fine. it's just some boy. He'll live, you know, it'll make you stronger. But to her, she's destroyed at that moment.
Yeah,
and
that's legitimate.
Yeah, and the choices that parents make in those situations almost defines their relationship with their kids from that moment on. If especially in the first moments of when those kids have their first experience like that, if you're a parent and you take that kind of a situation and this coming from someone who's not a parent, but I was a kid one time, so still am. But if you take that situation and just look at that kid and go, oh, you'll live, you'll get over it, then you that's the beginning of a disconnect between you and your kid. Mm-hmm. That's where you and your kid start to go like different directions.
Yeah,
because
they really don't care about me.
Yeah, that's mm-hmm. what you're telling them pretty much. Or sure. to them, that's what you're saying. Even though to you, you love your kid and you know mm-hmm. that your kid's going to be fine. You know, it's, yeah. but
and I think the kids sometimes need to know
not to
that
be
you're
so
not,
dramatic. Yeah.
Well, we're not perfect.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's like, you know, sometimes Luke will, he'll let me know when he's really upset. I think that happened on the way here, actually. But it's like, you know, and if you're an idiot, you don't get it.
Yeah.
And then you got to kind of dig out of that and earn that back. But I think yeah. that's a great idea. You know, there was that, I think you should do it. But because I think it would be helpful for not only young people, but parents yeah. too, if it were getting viewed by yeah. both parties, I guess.
Yeah.
But I was reading some about that lonely girl on YouTube. Are y'all familiar with that? The lonely girl?
Mm-hmm.
I guess it's a lot like what you were just describing in that this girl. Everybody thought it was like an aunt. Do you know about it, Luke? Lonely girl? And it was this girl that was just doing this kind of diary online, you know, on YouTube. And
yeah.
I guess you can search it. And I apparently it came out late. And she was like, I guess, really good at what she was doing because later, I guess it came out that she was just faking it all, that everything was made up and it was just a... maybe they made a gazillion dollars on some kind of marketing thing with it. You know,
yeah,
I
yeah.
don't know the meme stuff or whatever that means. But they, it's kind of like, remember PTL, Rob, you probably remember, what's dude's name? Jim and Tammy Faye Baker.
Oh yeah.
And how they were exposed for all this stuff, you know, on TV, but it does not take away the impact that it had, you know,
yeah.
on people, and that it changed people's lives. And that just goes back from a biblical perspective worldview, is that God uses anything.
Yeah.
Wicked kings, jawbones of asses, you know, witches, people like you and me, and
yeah.
To do his work. And I guess the same as with something like this lonely girl, you know,
yeah.
there's different ways we can help people. And God's going to use her truth as truth, and it's going to
yeah.
help connect with people. Now, if somebody actually did it legit, like you're talking,
yeah.
and it's real people, I think it would be powerful.
Yeah.
I think, you know, I think the world needs more and more of that, and that's where we're headed anyway. More and more we're going to be affected and watching digital, I guess, exposure of who we are as human beings on our phones and on the
yeah.
walls and holograms and everything else.
Yeah.
But that's what I love about independent movies is Luke and I were fortunate enough to go to the Indie Memphis thing this year, and it was just so cool to see movies that were just really truth. I mean,
yeah.
about life. Mm-hmm. And it's just like once you see something and you connect to it, and there's no script really almost. I mean, it's obvious there's no script. And that's what
yeah.
you're talking about, I think. And kids,
yeah.
I think, especially
yeah.
young people, are starving for that. You know, am I all alone? No, I'm not.
Yeah.
There's a girl, guy.
Yeah.
Dealing with the same
yeah.
stuff.
Yeah. You know?
That can be pivotal.
Yeah. It'd be cool. Rob, let's do it.
What? What?
Let's do it.
Do what?
The movie.
Let's do it. Let's make some.
Yeah.
You know, you made me think there's just some things you said in there just talking about being real. It's something I said to, I served at our church as a junior high interim pastor for a couple years for the junior high. And then I spent like 2.5 years leading worship for the junior high. And so I spent a lot of time with kids, you know, sixth grade, seventh, eighth grade, ninth, and so on. And I watched some of them grow up over 2 or 3 years. And you know, a lot you were saying earlier too, kind of hit on a little bit, but kids at that age in the middle school age start going through a transition from a concrete thinking to an abstract thinker. And what that basically means is when a kid is maybe 10 or 11 years old and you say, it's raining cats and dogs, you know, they picture immediately really cats and dogs
yeah.
and not the abstract that it just means it's pouring rain and enough to knock cats and dogs off the roof kind of deal.
Yeah.
And I spent a lot of time thinking about what it is that kids think through and how they're feeling and all, just as you were just saying. It's like I had so many kids come to me and say, you know, Brother Rob, would you please pray for me for this and all. And it's like I was amazed at how big situations seem to them and how small to me they really are, not being in a parenting role, but more in a pastoral or shepherding role. It was easier for me to be objective and go, oh, you know, this is a big thing for them and I've got to treat this right, where maybe I've not always done that with my own kids. So that's a little bit dangerous.
All right, Ben,
I got to go eat.
Do we have
a Tyrannosaurus Tourette syndrome? If I don't eat, I started cussing and carrying on.
Hey, Ben, do we have a Twitter?
We do have a Twitter.
What is it?
At Poser Podcast.
Do we have a Facebook page?
We do.
What is it?
Facebook.com/Poser Podcast.
They have an Instagram?
We do.
What is it?
At Poser Podcast.
We have a YouTube channel.
We do.
What is it?
It's YouTube.com/Poser Podcast. What's our phone number?
3.
I think there's a 3 in there somewhere.
There is. No, there's not. There's just a bunch of 2s. It's 901-290-2212. If you want to call us and give some feedback, topic ideas, or something like that.
Book a venue or something.
Yeah. Huh? You going to call me right now? Oh, yeah, I'm sure. It's 901-290-2212.
I'd like to ask everyone to visit my Facebook page at facebook.com/index.php5/#134xq-3l4.
/tag/front/ Yes, it does.
All right.
All right. Don't stare at the potato.
Don't stare at the potato.
All right. Keep up the great work.